From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. You are kind indeed. Thank you. We do have a great show for you this week. We've got stand-up Jesse Klein coming by to play Not My Job. But first, CNN did a poll recently. They asked Americans, out of all the money in the federal budget, how much do they think goes to public broadcasting? And the average response was 5%, 5% of the federal budget. That's true, and that would amount to about $175 billion. To which we say, busted! It's true. That's why instead of flying in Carl every week to do our show, we can afford to clone a new Carl. So what do you think of the world, new Carl?
It's so shiny.
And you might ask, well, what then do we do with all the old Carls? Well, everybody, I want you to look under your chairs. That's right. You get a Carl, and you get a Carl, and you get a Carl. If you'd like to play our games, give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're in Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard from Jackson, Wyoming.
Benjamin Bombard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, gosh, you sound like the hero of like a 1940s movie serial. That's so great. The Adventures of Benjamin Bombard, Sky Captain. That's totally great. What do you do? Tell me you hunt for foreign spies.
No, I hunt elk during the fall up here, but I'm a journalist.
You're a journalist?
Yes, sir.
Oh. No, I'm kidding. Well, welcome to the show, Benjamin.
Thank you. Let me
introduce you to our panel. First up, a man the New York Times called an obscure, semi-famous humorist, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hey, Tom.
Hi, Benjamin. True story.
Next, one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hello, Ms. Roxanne.
Hello, Benjamin.
And an alum of both Second City and the Colbert Report, Mr. Peter Gross.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Benjamin.
So, Benjamin, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. That means Carl Castle is going to recreate for you three quotations in the week's news, of course. Your job, identify or explain just two of them. Do that. You'll win his voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Here is your first quote.
If it comes to pass, tens of thousands of federal workers will be forced to give up their BlackBerries.
That was from the Washington Post. It was one of the many predictions about what big possible event this week.
The partial government shutdown?
Yes, indeed, the government shutdown. All week, political reporters were acting like Kremlinologists back in the 70s, looking for clues as to what was happening behind closed doors. For example, if John Boehner is seen crying, that means there's going to be a shutdown. If he's not crying, it means he's dead. And it came so close, they came within like a day of saying, no government for you, you know? It almost happened, and people didn't care. The entire federal government was almost brought to a standstill, and the American public just, you know, okay. We cared more when they were threatening to take Arrested Development off the air.
Here's the question. How can you tell they're not working?
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. It's like state highway workers. How would you know? I mean, if they were on strike, they just, I guess, turn the shovels the other way up.
As it were. I just put up a sign, government shutdown. Please use free market today.
So, members of Congress are considered essential. They would have had to work, but their staff would have had to go home. And they would have had to, like, you know, manage by themselves without staff. It would have been hard. They would have had to, like, go get their own coffee. They'd have to have illicit affairs with themselves. But what would it have been like, though, if, like, they had sent home, like, all the, you know, all the government employees and kept only the congressmen and the representatives, the senators, and they had to do all the jobs? right? Just like they do in like when like a real company goes on strike and the managers have to take over. I mean, we would have loved to see that. We would have loved to see, you know, Michelle Bachmann manning the federal needle exchange program in downtown Washington, D.C. and Harry Reid has to go be the panda at the National Zoo. It's a natural fit. He never moves either, you know.
Well, they could man those T-shirt carts out in front of the White House there. And,
yeah,
selling the souvenirs. That would work.
Ooh. What would it say? I saved $33 billion and all I got was this lousy T-shirt.
So your next quote comes from a presidential campaign video that was released this week.
I don't agree with him on everything, but I respect him and I trust him.
That somewhat lackluster endorsement came from a man named Ed in North Carolina. What candidate was he talking about?
Barack Obama?
Yes, indeed. The presidential reelection campaign has begun. It's Obama 2, change harder. The president launched his first presidential campaign 4 years ago with a speech and a rally in Springfield, Illinois, in the footsteps of Abraham Lincoln. He launched his reelection campaign with a two-minute infomercial video in the footsteps of ShamWow. The president's video, in which the president hardly appears, features real people saying real things, you know, like, wow, I guess there's going to be an election, huh? And maybe we'll vote for President Obama again if there's nobody better by that time.
It'd be great if Obama announced the same way that he did before. He was like, we're going to change Washington. I'm going to go down there and change all the rules. And everyone's like, it's your rules, dude. What are you doing?
The problem for Obama is he has to declare his candidacy in order to raise money, but it's too early to be in full campaign mode for the president. And besides, he's ambivalent about running again. And who can blame him? He's probably thinking, man, sometimes I wish I was born in Kenya.
He's going to plant a false birth certificate.
Yeah, really? No, seriously, I'm not qualified. Wasn't born here. Sorry.
Yeah.
I would
Can't
love
run again.
I'd love to serve, but what can you do?
Exactly. Benjamin, your last quote comes from a passenger on a Southwest flight last week.
I didn't know this dude, but I was like, I'm going to just hold your hand.
What made that passenger suddenly want to hold the dude's hand next to her?
A hole in the airplane?
Exactly right. So you're flying Albuquerque, Phoenix maybe, to Sacramento, I think it was, and there's a bump. No problem, that happens. And then a huge hole opens in the ceiling of the plane. But still, not a problem, fresh air, you know, and you were having trouble getting that little sort of air nozzle thing to work anyway, so...
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
God, when I flew in here this week, I thought, wow, this is great. You know, just cruising in Chicago, pilot puts the top down, you know.
It was cool.
Nice spring day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
My plane had a T-top. It was great.
This is more of a moonroof. The pilot was typically cool about the whole thing, as pilots are, you know, very Captain Sully. It's like, those on the right of the plane can see the Grand Canyon. Those on the left can see the majesty of space above you. Apparently, one of the causes of the rupture is Southwest policies. They fly a lot of short trips over and over again. That tends to wear out the planes, also requiring the passengers to help pedal constress the fuselage. But true to their rambunctious style, they're working this into their marketing. Their new slogan is, you are now free to move about the sky.
Maybe if they charge for bags, they could buy a working roof. I would do that. They'd be like, well, you can either, your bags can fly for free and the top will fly off the plane, or you can pay $50 and you can make it safely. Let me check my balance on my credit card.
You know.
See if I have enough.
But there's all the stuff, you know, the overhead compartments. So did those overhead compartments stay intact? Or
apparently the masks did come down.
Yeah.
So 300 people were like, damn, I wish I'd paid attention.
What do you do? Yeah.
What do you do with this?
Right. Why the hot water bottles?
Yeah. Carl, how did Benjamin do in our quiz?
Perfect game, Peter. 3 correct answers. So, Benjamin, I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Woohoo!
Well done. Thanks so much for playing, Benjamin.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Right now, panel time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Tom, 2010 was a great year for the Transocean Oil Company. We know this because they gave out big bonuses to their executives as a reward for their, quote, best year ever in safety performance. Best year ever for them, despite one little glitch. What?
That little ink in the drink business in the Gulf of Mexico?
Yes, yeah. Basically the Gulf oil spill. That was theirs. Sure, 11 people were killed when their oil rig in the Gulf exploded. All right, that is bad. But how many employees did Transocean Management allow to live last year? Thousands. Strangely, and this is true, Transocean executives got no safety bonus in 2009 because their record was so bad that year. What could they possibly have done that was worse than this year? Did they force employees to face each other in gladiatorial combat? What?
2009 was the running with scissors year.
This speaks to such a sunny optimism on behalf of that company. Now, they're like, some say the Gulf is half full of oil. We say it's half empty. Thank you so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Mike from Dallas.
Hey, Mike, how are things in Dallas?
Very nice.
I bet. So what do you do there?
I work at an auction house.
What do you auction?
Well, we auction everything, but I work in the sports memorabilia department.
Sports memorabilia, so things like shirts and cards and...
Sure, and signed baseballs, but, you know, our company does everything. Dinosaur bones.
Really?
Things like that.
What sport is that?
Mike, it is nice to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Mike's topic?
I always say, when life gives you lemons, rub them in the open wound of an enemy.
So things don't always work out the way we want, but it's how we respond to that adversity that defines us. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of people overcoming disappointment and inspiring the world. Choose the true story, and you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
First, let's hear from Peter Gross.
Paris, France will always be able to attract visitors with its museums, restaurants, and aloof French women who won't talk to you no matter how many semesters of French you took in college. But how do less desirable European cities cash in on tourist dollars? Well, the mayor of Groningen, Holland, has found the answer. Groningen is one of those unfortunate industrial towns that had its heyday after World War II, but has been slowly decaying ever since, and last month, a Dutch newspaper dubbed it the ugliest city in Holland. So Mayor Jan van Omen decided to make it official. We started advertising that Groningen really is the ugliest city in Holland, said Mayor van Omen, and that people should come and see for themselves just how unattractive our town really is. The few intrepid residents who remained pitched in with the uglification efforts. They put avocado green wall-to-wall shag carpeting in public buildings. They made everyone in town wear light blue denim shirts and dark blue denim pants. All the men grew soul patches and mullets. And just last week, they opened an Olive Garden franchise. Soon, the town was a real crap hole, and curious tourists, they couldn't stay away. They have made more than enough money to repair the town, but are in a bit of a bind. Said Mayor van Omen, if we actually fix Groningen, I'm not sure people will come. We could really use the money, though. It's an interesting place to visit, but nobody wants to live here anymore.
The ugliest town in Holland. Next up, a story of doing what you can with what you've got comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Like so many basketball fans, Toby Stevens' March Madness bracket was busted badly by the second round, and he lost his bet to best friend Jack Kane, which is why the Rice University business major was wearing boxer shorts on his head to Monday's final game in Houston. Was he embarrassed? Well, sure. Did the CBS cameras love it? You bet. They showed Stevens at least four times during the broadcast. Is he now a budding internet entrepreneur? Well, yes. By the time he got home from the game, Stevens' inbox had more than 1,000 fan emails, including an offer from a venture capitalist to launch a, quote, head boxers business. In the last 3 days, Stevens has created a website and sold more than 5,000 units at $10 each, available in 100% cotton or comfy poly blend. His motto, think outside the boxer.
Having to wear boxers on one's head leads to a business opportunity. Your last story of making the best of a bad situation comes from Tom Beaudet.
Every little girl dreams of having her very own jumping show cow. Or is that just Regina Mayer of Laufen, Germany? Actually, it wasn't even her. Regina, like anyone else, wanted a horse to ride around the family's farm in southern Germany. Nein horse, said her parents. Ja horse, said Regina. Nein horse, ja horse. Undoubtedly went the debate until little Reggie gave up and turned her attention to Luna, the cow. Four legs, big head, flanks. Luna was closer to a horse than to nothing, so she went about training Luna to perform like one. With tips from a cow expert in Switzerland, where they have such things as cow experts, Luna was soon allowing Regina to ride her and even gracefully jumping painted fence rails. Annie Wiltofsky, who trains cows near Zurich, said Luna's talents are not surprising and that historically it was quite common to ride cows. Never mind the forgotten exploits of the mounted Swiss Army cow brigades or the stirring battle cry, "My kingdom for a cow." Regina and Luna are happy to make their own history galloping through the Edelweiss, a girl and her cow.
All right. Mike.
Yeah.
Here are your choices from Peter Gross, How the Ugliest Town in Holland Tried to Turn That into a Reason for Tourists to Come There. From Roxanne Roberts, How a Guy Who Was Forced to Wear Boxer Shorts on His Head in Public Realized that That Could Be a Hot-Selling Headwear Item. Or from Tom Baudet, How a Girl Who Was Not Allowed to Have a Show Horse Like She Wanted Made Do with a Show Cow. Which of these is a real story of someone making the best of a bad situation?
I'm going to go with Peter's story.
You're going to go with Peter's story about the ugliest town in Holland. Any particular reason?
Once you get an Olive Garden, it's all downhill from there.
That was the telling detail. I understand. Makes sense to me. Well, actually, this true story got a lot of news coverage, and here is an excerpt from some of that coverage.
Jumping cows may be the stuff of folklore, but in the real world, this one can be found leaping through the German countryside.
That was from an Al Jazeera English report on Luna the jumping cow.
Unbelievable.
It is, in fact, unbelievable. When you see this, you will think that the whole thing is a hoax. But no, she's out there jumping around on a cow. So clearly, as you have no doubt figured out, it was Tom who had the real story. Sadly, you did not win, but you didn't earn a point for Peter for his Olive Garden laden.
That's good enough.
Yep. Down.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for playing.
Thank you very much.
And enjoy those breadsticks.
Thanks.
Ah, ye brass, and I moo all day. I'm a cow.
I'm a cow.
I'm a cow.
I'm a cow.
I eat green grass, and I give white milk. I'm a cow.
I'm a cow.
I'm a cow. I'm a cow.
And now the game where we invite on interesting people and try and hold their interest. Our guest, Jesse Klein, is a comedian you've seen on Comedy Central, VH1's Best Week Ever, most hilariously of all, CNBC. She's a former writer for Saturday Night Live. Her Comedy Central Presents special premiered last month. Jesse Klein, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. So my understanding is you were not like the typical comedian. You were not like the class clown in the fifth grade. You were not performing.
Oh, no, no, no. I was like a big nerd. I wore big glasses, and I was very shy.
Right. And it wasn't until you were working at Comedy Central as, like, an executive.
Yeah.
Until you started performing.
Basically, I was always very interested in comedy, but I was much more sort of academic. And then after college, loaded with my art history degree, I decided to go work at Comedy Central as a temp.
That makes perfect sense, actually.
Yeah, no. My parents were thrilled. But, I was working for the talent department, and I had to go see a lot of stand-up comedy to scout people. And basically, the more stand-up comedy I saw, the more convinced I became that I couldn't be as bad as the people I was seeing.
Right. You were like, my God, the bar is so low, I can simply step over it.
Yeah, oh my, if there's a low goal,
yeah,
I will try for that goal.
How did you then make the transition to performing? It's not that easy, this stand-up
stuff. You know, it's actually, I guess it's easy if you have no dignity and your boyfriend just broke up with you and you have lots of time. And believe it or not, I have both of those things going for me.
No, really?
God, most people turn to Ben and Jerry's when that happens.
Oh, believe me, there is a lot of chunky monkey being absolutely guzzled in my house at the time. But the very first time I did stand-up, I went to an open mic on the Lower East Side at a place that doesn't exist anymore. And it was one of those open mics that wasn't really just for comedy, by which I mean it was really more for people to, like, read poetry about their dads and cry, which was a lot of those things. So I went, and but they would do, basically, you could just go, and you would pay them $3 to go on stage.
Wow.
Yeah, which gets into the whole no dignity thing.
Not only did you have to pay, but it was so cheap.
I know, $3. It's, like, exactly the
Come
right
on, I'm
money.
Worth bribing you at least $100. So... Tell me about that first. So you get out there, you're going to do your... What was your first act like?
Oh, my God, it was so bad. It was very terrible. You know, most comedians go up on stage and maybe they have, like, a notebook, you know, with a couple of things, like some words written down. I had typed everything out, like, word for word.
Oh, no.
Including when I would say, like, and okay. Just because...
As long as you don't write in pause for laughter, that I think would be...
Oh, yeah, no. Believe me, that was not happening. My first joke, I think it was something about, like, you know how when you're on the subway... and I had written out. When you're on the subway and the subway honks, why is it honking? I mean, what's down there? A deer? That was a joke.
No, I like that.
If you're waiting for more, I have bad news for you. There isn't more.
That was the joke, right?
$3 worth.
Yeah, I know.
That would have been worth $3 to hear that.
I know, it's awful. I was not into, like, set up punchline. I was into, like, bad punchline, long explanation, followed by apology.
Really? Is there a danger when you're kind of comedian, which is constantly being very funny about how unhappy your life is? Is there a danger of becoming happy? Do you have to watch for that?
Well, you know, I would say that maybe in general there is, but... you know, if you have the parents that I had, you're very safe from that.
Right. They gave you that gift. Eternal discontent.
I mean, it's a very long line of purebred anxiety.
Oh yeah. Are they proud of you now that you're a confessional comedian?
Oh, they are so proud that their daughter, who went to Vassar College to get an art history degree, now tells jokes on stages all over the country. Oh, they just can't wait to get into conversations with people to tell them what their daughter does. We had a daughter, but she died.
Well, Jesse Klein, we're delighted to have you. We have asked you here to play a game that this time we are calling
Stool Ball, Rounders, Tilka Palantawa.
All of which were early names for what has become the game of baseball.
Oh, God.
And as this season gets underway, we thought we'd ask you three questions about the early history of the game, taken from the book Baseball by George Vesey. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine.
So exciting. I'm ready.
Carl, who is Jesse playing for?
Jesse is playing for Robert Perry of Seattle, Washington.
All right.
Awesome.
Here we go. First question. First things first. Baseball wasn't invented by Abner Doubleday at Cooperstown in the 19th century. That's a myth. There were actually lots of versions of bat and ball games going back centuries, including a German game called Ball with Free Station, which had what interesting rule? A, runners must skip from base to base. B, when throwing out a runner at a base, the fielder must yell, "Burned!" Or C, the batter is allowed to carry the bat with him as he rounds the bases and uses it to fend off attempts... to tag him out.
Wow. God, all so believable.
You bet.
I'm going to rule out... So this is German?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to rule out skipping, then.
Yeah, they're not...
That feels like too happy a mode of transportation. I'm going to go to C. The fending off sounds like that's in their wheelhouse.
Sadly, it was actually B. The fielder has to shout, "Burned!" as he throws the runner out at the base.
Oh, man.
I feel that baseball should have retained that rule. All right, you still have two more chances. The first umpire was introduced in the game in 1845. But the role of the umpire at first was a little different. What did the umpire do at that time? A, he sat at a table by the side of the field wearing a top hat and sometimes tails, ready to adjudicate any disputes. B, he held a pistol to keep anyone from attacking anyone else with a bat. Or C, he awarded points to each team for style.
I think the... Oh, God. Oh, God, this is, like, as boring as baseball. me thinking about these answers, not you telling me the possible answers. I'm going to go with A, old-timey hat.
You're right.
Okay. Well done.
Thank God.
So the players were allowed to determine calls themselves, but if there was a disagreement, they'd go over and see what the guy in the hat had to say about it. All right, you can win it all just by getting this last question right.
Nothing has ever meant more to me. Let's do this.
Let's do this. The first great baseball star was James Creighton of the Brooklyn Niagaras, famed for his speedball pitch. His career ended suddenly in 1862 when what happened? A, he decided to quit and try to make his fortune in the more appealing new game, foot polo. B, he was caught up in the first American sports celebrity sex scandal with an avid fan named Fanny Mayhaps. Or C, he killed himself when he swung too hard at a pitch.
Wow, that question ended on a real downer.
It did.
It was comedy, 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 very grim.
Wow. I like this annotation before we get to an answer. This is great.
Yeah, I guess... I have to say that my immediate gut instinct is that the answer is B, the sex scandal, because I feel like...
With Fanny Mayhaps?
Oh, shoot. I don't think I listened to the name before. Shoot.
It's
that sultry siren.
She wasn't for Fanny
for
sure.
Mayhaps.
Mayhaps?
She was Fanny Mayhaps.
All right. Well, I don't think it's the downer of C. I guess A, although I don't think foot polo sounds any crazier than Fanny Mayhap. Personally, those sound equally silly times to me. Can I just say A, B, and C?
No, you have to pick one. Pick one, be firm, go.
Did all three things happen to him in like one day?
He had a sex scandal, quit to play foot polo, and then took one last fatal swing.
He couldn't live with the bad press off
it
of
was
the
a,
sex
It was
scandal.
An interesting day. No, here we go. This is it. You have to make your final choice. Go. What is it?
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A. That's all right. That's your choice.
I'm sticking with A.
It's C. That's all right. Yeah. It was C. What happened was he swung so hard that he actually caused internal injuries, and he died 3 days later. The good news, hit a home run.
Well, I mean, what a way to go.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Wow, I feel like I really blew it in the last 5 minutes of this.
It was more like 10.
Amazing.
Carl, how did Jesse do in our quiz?
Well, Jesse had just one correct answer, Peter, and that's not enough to win for Robert Perry.
Oh, man. I couldn't feel more sorry and embarrassed.
That's the goal.
There you go. That's why we're here.
We all got what we came for.
We're giving you more material.
Done and done.
Jesse Klein is a comedian. Her Comedy Central special premiered last month. Jesse, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you, guys. In just a minute, Carl insists NPR stands for National Public Radio in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Peter, Donald Trump, reality show star and douchillionaire, is considering a run for president. Recently, he's been saying that President Obama has never released his, quote, real birth certificate. And to show how easy it is, Trump released his own birth certificate to the press. One little problem, though, what?
It wasn't his real birth certificate.
Exactly right. Donald Trump said, quote, it's inconceivable that after 4 years of questioning, the president still hasn't produced his birth certificate. It took me 1 hour to get my birth certificate, unquote. Well, it turns out it took him 1 hour to get an unofficial certificate that sort of looks like a birth certificate. It had a seal, and it looked official, but upon closer inspection, it said Trump may already have won the Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes.
It would be the best White House ever.
He would never leave the White House briefing room. You know, like, Obama kind of never goes in there. Yeah. He, like, you thought Clinton liked talking to the press. Trump would be like, come here. Come here. I'm going to show you. Look what I did to the Oval Office. Look at this chair. It's incredible.
Real gold.
Real
gold. Gold.
This chair is made of former presidents.
Yeah.
I dug up William Henry Harrison.
Tom, when Sarah and George Bentley were children, their parents split up and George went with the father, Sarah with the mother, and over the years they lost track of each other. So how did they reconnect?
How did they meet up? George and Sarah Bentley, they got married.
No, yeah. It didn't go that far.
It didn't go that far. They met on an online dating site.
They did. George and Sarah met via an online dating site and began exchanging texts and emails. They really hit it off. They had so much in common. So they decided to meet in some romantic spot. He was like, you grew up in Scotland? Me too. You remind me so much of my mom. You have her eyes and you have her mouth and oh my God, you have 50% of her DNA. The two were glad to have reunited and plan to get to know each other as family as soon as they can both stop compulsively showering.
What's
Do we know how far they
it
got
did
to know
not go very far. Oh, they were at good. The date. I mean, they had been sort of flirting with each other online, so they felt very sort of skeeved out about the whole thing.
They figured this out on the
did.
First
date? They figured it out on the first date.
There's got to be like a general filter question of like, just really basic off the top, are you related to me?
Yeah. It could be a general question. Do you have any missing siblings?
Yeah.
We
are family. I got all my sisters with me. We are family. Get up, everybody, sing. Now, guys, it is time for a little game that we like to call
Extra, Extra, Read All About It.
Okay, panel, Carl here is going to read you each three recent headlines, only one of which we actually found in a newspaper, magazine, or website. Pick the real one, and you get a point. So, Peter, you're up first. This headline appeared in The Mirror. It's a tabloid in the UK. It's an entertainment story. Was it
Paris Hilton banned from the Paris Hilton?
Or
Britain's Got Talent bans juggler because his balls are too big?
Or
Charlie Sheen, insert latest embarrassment here.
This is The Mirror?
The Mirror.
I'm going to say B, the juggler with the balls.
You are right. A man named Noah Kelly wanted to juggle his 3.5-foot-wide balls on the show, but he was told it was a safety risk, as we could all imagine.
But not a risk to hilarious headlines.
All right. Roxanne, you're up next. The Santa Clarita Valley Signal headlined a story about some science news this way. Was it
60% of scientific studies inaccurate, says study?
Or
Newhall Memorial names Dr. Frankenstein chief medical officer?
Or
fossil data shows early man chronically late?
Oh, they're all so good.
Yes.
I'm tempted by the study says.
Study says?
Yeah.
No, actually, it was Frankenstein.
Frankenstein,
yeah.
Okay.
Dr. Richard S. Frankenstein insists it's pronounced Frankenstein. Of course he does. All right, Tom, you're up last. Here we go. This is from Wired magazine. It was an animal story. Was it
elephant vasectomies, how vets pull it off?
Or
officials say double horn unicorn, just a goat.
Or
bald eagles observed using comb overs.
this is why I got to go with the elephant vasectomy.
And you're right.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Oh my gosh.
We'll spare you the details of the story, but a crane is involved. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. You can also check out the new podcast from the producers of Wait Wait, How to Do Everything, at howtodoeverything.org. This week, how to survive if a giant hole opens up in the fuselage of your plane. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Annabelle Schlossberg from Brooklyn, New York.
Hey, Annabelle, how are things in Brooklyn?
They're pretty good. I can't complain.
Really? I understand that was the national sport of Brooklyn at one time. My relatives are from Brooklyn. They're pretty good at it.
Exactly.
Well, welcome to the show, Annabelle.
Thank you.
You are going to play the game in which you have to, of course, complete two of the three news-related limericks Carl is about to recite for you. Give us that last word or phrase two times. You'll win our prize. Ready to go?
I am.
Here's your first limerick.
I've got wheat, hops, and malt over here for my mornings that need some more cheer. To make me more merry, it's flavored with cherry. I'm drinking a new breakfast.
Beer?
Yes, beer. Very good. So, are you tired of the way people look at you when you pop open a cold one before 10 a.m.? Well, you should seek help for your alcoholism. Or if that doesn't sound like fun, you could try the new breakfast beer. The New Zealand brewery Moa says, quote, if you're having a champagne for breakfast but don't fancy champagne, have a beer instead. The cherry lager is part of your balanced breakfast. It's just a thing to wash down those honey nut beerios. All right, very good. Here is your next limerick.
Knitting fates to me sounded like bull. Yet like them, I now have my hands full. As I'm ending my years, my sheep meet the shears, and I'm knitting a coffin of
wool.
Yes, wool. Very good. So, do you like your cozy wool sweaters? Are you planning on dying? Well, consider the latest thing in green burials, the woolen coffin. The Hainsworth Wool Mill in England expects their natural legacy caskets to become their biggest seller because, you know, unlimited demand. They say their woolen coffins can hold up to 800 pounds, and nothing says comfort and repose like an open cardigan funeral.
That's cotton is the fabric of our lives, and wool.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter if it's itchy.
Yeah, that's true.
You're comfortable either way.
You don't have to wear a t-shirt in the coffin. To...
Here is your last limerick.
It gets better, I'm told. Just be brave, man. Give that body hair one swooping shave, man. Come on, Grok, you big lout. It's okay to be out. I am gay in the time of the...
Caveman?
Yes, caveman. Annabelle, I'm going to ask you a question. And it's totally fine, whatever your answer is.
Yes.
Is there somebody there with you?
I have a friend here.
Okay.
I'm smart on my own and clever on my own.
It's fine. It's totally fine. Can I say hello to her? Is it a
sure, hold on. Okay. Hi.
Hi, who's this?
Lily.
Hi, Lily. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. So were you the one who figured that one out?
The caveman?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Could you put Annabelle back on?
Yes, here she is.
Hello, Annabelle?
Yes.
You're right. It's caveman.
But I did get 2 out of 3 on
you
my own.
You did great. Archaeologists in Prague have uncovered the 5,000-year-old remains of what they believe might be the world's earliest known gay man. You see, the male skeleton is oriented in a way that's almost always reserved, that is always reserved for women in that culture. He's facing east as opposed to the west like other men. He's also buried with household items, pots and decorations instead of weapons and tools. These findings lead the scientist only one conclusion. He was artsy. And it raises questions. What would it have been like for a gay caveman? We assume, as he might today, he would spend a lot of his time clubbing.
Yeah. Did they find him with his roommate, Jeff?
Carl, how did Annabelle do on our quiz?
Annabelle had 3 correct answers. Fetus or Annabelle, you win our prize.
You do.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I did get 2 out of 3 myself.
I know, Annabelle. It's totally cool.
The record.
But all right, we appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you so much to all of you for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Peter Gross has the lead. Peter, he has 4 points. Roxanne Roberts and Tom Beaudet, they're tied for second. They both have 3 points.
All right. We flipped a coin. Tom has elected to go first. Here we go. The clock will start when they begin. Your first question, fill in the blank. A tsunami warning was issued briefly after a 7.4 magnitude earthquake hit Thursday off the coast of blank.
Japan.
Right. A security breach at the online marketing firm Epsilon allowed hackers to steal millions of customer blank.
Email addresses.
Right. In what some consider the worst NCAA championship game of all time, blank beat Butler 53-41.
Connecticut.
Right. Weather forecasters predict that this year's blank season will be stronger than average.
Hurricanes.
Right. Dachshund enthusiasts were overjoyed at the opening of the online store blank.
Wiener dog wear.
No, petmywiener.com. When his contract with Fox News expires at the end of the year, blank announced he will leave the network.
Glenn Beck.
Exactly right. Dancing with the Stars dancer Max Shimerkovsky apologized on Tuesday for blanking during Monday's show.
I missed that episode. Cussing.
No, for dropping Kirstie Alley.
Ooh, why?
A carjacker in Canada stole a delivery van not realizing it contained blank.
Police.
No, 500 pounds of dirty diapers. Note to criminals everywhere, if they don't have dollar signs on them, they are not sacks of cash. Despite the driver telling him he really, really didn't want to steal this particular van, the carjacker zoomed off, his 1 second of triumph followed by a good 10 minutes of, oh God, is that me? Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points, and Tom has the lead.
All right, well done.
Not enough.
Roxanne, you are up next. Here we go, fill in the blank. In a reversal, Attorney General Eric Holder announced that the plotters behind the blank attacks would be tried in military, not civilian court.
The 9/11.
Yeah, 9/11, yeah. Right. After just 9 minutes and 50 seconds, the trial of Italian Prime Minister Blank was adjourned until May 31st.
Berlusconi.
Right. The AP reports the Department of Homeland Security is planning to use Facebook and Blank to issue terror alert warnings.
Twitter.
Right. With more than 2/3 of the vote, Michel Martelly, also known as Sweet Mickey, was elected the new president of Blank.
Haiti.
Right. At the Masters, golfer Aaron Baddeley chose not to play it where it laid when his golf ball landed in Blank.
In a lady's lap.
Exactly right. Voice actors from across the country flocked to audition to become the new voice of Blank's spokes duck.
Affleck.
Right. On the first stop of his Torpedo of Truth tour in Detroit, audience members booed at Blank and left in droves.
Charlie Sheen.
Right. Parents at an elementary school in Virginia were surprised when a plastic surgeon visiting for career day blanked.
He brought silicone breast implants.
To show and tell. Exactly.
Yes.
Right. Students were supposed to be learning about what it's like to be a plastic surgeon, but no one ever thought he'd bring props. The school had no official comment, but the teacher did say that next year she'll ask the surgeon not to start his speech by squeezing the implant and making honk, honk. All right, Carl, how well did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Very, very well, Peter. 8 correct answers, 16 more points. She now has 19 points and the lead.
Well done. That was pretty impressive.
Why do we bother, Peter?
So how many, then, does Peter need to win?
8 correct answers.
8 correct. Here we
go,
Peter.
And there's 40 questions?
There are 40 questions. Here we go. This is for the game, Peter. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, Muammar Gaddafi sent a letter to President Obama asking him to stop the attack on blank.
Libya?
Right. Battles broke out after the ousted incumbent president of blank refused to give up power.
Ivory Coast.
Right. Workers in Japan finally plugged the radioactive water leak at the blank in Fukushima.
Nuclear power plant?
Right. On Monday, the AP reported that when her contract with the CBS Evening News is up in June, blank will likely leave.
Katie Kirk.
Right. Police on the lookout for a bearded New Jersey man who stole $658 in razors say the suspect may blank.
He may blank? Oh, he may shave his beard?
Exactly right. The hard-fought race for a judicial seat in Wisconsin went for the Republican incumbent when the state announced blank.
recount?
No, when it announced it had forgotten to count the votes from an entire city. Rutgers University was criticized for paying Nobel Prize-winning author Toni Morrison less for a speaking engagement than it paid blank.
Mario Batali.
Snooki. A 75-year-old woman in the country of Georgia accidentally blanked when she was digging a hole.
Accidentally dug all the way to China.
No, she actually cut off the internet for the entire country of Armenia, as well as parts of Georgia and Azerbaijan. Oops. The elderly woman was out.
What was she planting?
No, she was out looking for copper wires buried. She was scavenging, and apparently her shovel hit the most wrong wire possible. But on the bright side, during the half a day they didn't have the internet, Armenians were able to reconnect emotionally with their loved ones, lose weight, write the novels they always were thinking about, cure cancer, and send a spaceship to claim Mars for Armenia. Then some idiot plugged it back in. Carl, did Peter do well enough to win?
He needed 8 correct answers, but Peter had just 5
correct
answers.
Oh, my goodness.
So with 19 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's
champion.
There
you go.
Good job.
Well done, Roxanne. That's pretty impressive.
They have to wear boxers on their heads.
Done.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists that when Donald Trump finally declares himself a president, what his campaign slogan will be. But first, let me tell you all that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, which monitors mileage and safe driving habits to determine a personalized rate. Learn more at progressive.com. The National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at houselogic.com. And Vanderbilt University Medical Center, using a patient's genome to develop customized blood thinner therapy at vanderbilthealth.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR, WBEZ Chicago, in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Nick Parker. Web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, Newhouse, Lorna White, and Gary Yek. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will Donald Trump's campaign slogan be? Tom Baudet.
Trump, make this mean little face America's mean little face.
Roxanne Roberts.
He's conquered supermodels, comb-overs, and now Washington.
Peter Gross.
Trump 2012, richer than Romney, whiter than Huckabee, crazier than Bachman.
And if Trump goes with any of those slogans, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Roxanne Roberts, Peter Gross. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.